Dawn was still up as they shuffled through customs and into a waiting car. Nathan and Owen took a separate car to the hotel, so Jason and Rachel could go directly to the hospital. Jason's first priority was the people on the plane. Jason had never met either pilot. On the flight over, he pulled up their employee files and directed his U.S.-based staff to expedite transportation for their families to travel to be with them. In Jason's time as CEO, he'd only had to go to a crash scene two other times. Both were free of fatalities, both were issues with takeoff. The airplanes in both situations sustained some damage, but were by no means a complete loss. According to the early pictures Jason received in flight, that wasn't the case with the Costa Rica crash. The hospital was like nothing they'd seen in the States. Less than six stories tall, with walls that appeared to be crumbling and unsuitable for occupancy on the outside, it had a surprising amount of technology inside. It took a little time to find the right person to speak to, one who spoke English enough to get the information they needed. The staff allowed both Jason and Rachel into the large room where both the pilots were being treated. Neither man was conscious. Both of them looked like they'd been run over with a truck, or fallen out of the sky, as it stood. One of the doctors came to the room when he heard there were visitors for the survivors.
"How bad are they?"
Jason asked after Dr. Salvador introduced himself.
"Mr. Hyde should recover without complication. He suffered a spleen injury and some damage to his intestines."
Jason looked at the other man.
"And my co-pilot?" "Mr. Berglund is more complicated. There is swelling in his brain and several broken bones. We assumed he wasn't wearing the safety belts required for flight. There weren't any abrasions along his pelvis like that which we found in Mr. Hyde."
Jason shook his head.
"I haven't been to the crash site, or received any information from the International Civil Aviation Organization, or the local agency yet." "I understand the flight attendant survived with minimal injuries. Perhaps she can help with the facts."
Rachel placed a hand on Jason's arm. "Weren't you told Ron was in critical but stable condition?" Jason did a quick scan of the unit.
"Where is Mr. Lambert?" "Ah, yes, the passenger. He was transferred to a lower unit."
"Lower?" Jason asked.
"His injuries are not life-threatening. He is down one floor."
There was some relief in that. After the doctor walked away, Jason and Rachel moved to a small waiting room outside the unit.
"I guess they don't worry about HIPAA laws here," she said.
"Thank God." They took a flight of stairs and found the nurse caring for Ron. Through the broken English of one of the staff, they were told Ron was heavily medicated and shouldn't be disturbed for a few hours. Jason was relieved to have a few more hours before he was forced to speak to the man who just lost his wife.
"What now?"
Rachel asked once they left the floor. Any other staff member, and Jason wouldn't hesitate, but because he was speaking with Rachel, Jason cringed.
"I need you here while I go to the crash site. Try and find the flight attendant and get some information from her. If any of the family shows up, they need to see us on site. We should have more reinforcements by morning."
If Rachel was concerned, it didn't show. "That's why I'm here," she told him.
"You have your phone and a charger?"
She patted her briefcase.
"Money?"
"I have a credit card. I'm fine."
"Okay."
His gut squeezed.
"You're sure you're..."
"Jason, I'm a grown woman. Go. Do your job." She smiled. He pulled her close and kissed her.
"Be safe,"
he said, before he walked out the door. Several hours later, Rachel had given up on finding the flight attendant. She called around to the local hotels, many of which had people on staff who spoke English, and none said they had the attendant's name in their registry. The only hospital information was that she was treated for a few lacerations and a broken wrist and sent away. No one had seen her since. Rachel hoped it wasn't an omen and was simply a case of not looking in the right places to find her. Rachel sent several texts to Owen while she sat in the hospital waiting room. As expected, he was overly excited about being in a foreign country and was vowing to do better in his Spanish class when they returned to school later that month. On that, they both agreed. Jason wasn't on the radar. Then again, he was traveling to a clearing in a dense forest that probably didn't have a cell tower for miles. Around 10, she wondered if she should stick around or make her way to the hotel. She'd give herself till midnight, or until someone on the staff kicked her out. So far, there didn't seem to be anyone playing police to visiting hours. Doing everything in her power to keep from falling asleep, and only a few minutes from her midnight deadline, two Americans wearing pullover shirts with the Fairchild Charters logo walked into the lobby. She stopped them before they found the elevators. "Hello?" The woman was probably in her 50s, not more than 5'3" tall. The man looked to be in his early 40s and had to spend 5 hours a day in the gym working out. They turned at her voice and smiled. "You must be Rachel Price."
"I am. It's nice to hear a familiar language."
"Mr. Fairchild told us you'd be here. I'm Luis, and this is Isa. We're part of the crisis team." "Are there any changes?"
"No, not really. We have a crisis team? I didn't think we had a need."
"It's new, part of the relief effort sector."
Isa offered a soft smile. "I'm a clinical psychologist and fluent in 4 languages. Rachel was impressed.
"And I'm big and scary and double as a bodyguard."
"I don't know what to say to that."
And she didn't. He grinned.
"I'm here for Isa, but Mr. Fairchild wanted me to see you to the car, so you could go back to the hotel and rest."
"I was just about to take that trip alone. The last thing I want to do is fall asleep in the lobby."
They said their goodbyes, and Rachel left the noise and smell of the hospital. Once on the road, Rachel was grateful that San Jose, Costa Rica, had private drivers in relatively normal cars. But as the city passed by, she noticed people driving around in cars that would have been found in abandoned alleys without a license plate back in the States. She had felt safer driving into the city with Jason by her side than she did now, alone in a strange car. Still, it didn't take long for the driver to pull into a hotel turnaround and open the door for her. It was a Morrison, which, after the previous evening, didn't surprise her. At the desk, she gave them her name, and they handed her a key. An attendant swiped her key inside the elevator and escorted her to the top floor. There were only 3 doors in the short hall. She found the one with her number and quietly opened it. She didn't need to act like a mouse. It was a penthouse suite with everything one would expect in the U.S. She heard snoring coming from one of the rooms and poked her head inside. Nathan lay on his back, his mouth slack with sleep. After a little more investigation, she found Owen curled up on his side in another bedroom, the curtains open and the lights from the city drifting in. The master bedroom held a king-size bed that called her name. The suitcase she'd packed, along with the one Jason had tossed together, sat in the corner of the room. Instead of jumping right in bed, she made use of the mini-fridge and snack basket. Before sliding under the covers, she sent Jason one more text, telling him she'd made it to the hotel. Attempting to stay awake for Jason proved impossible, and she gave in to the night. Sometime, very early in the morning, Rachel felt Jason's arm around her waist. For a brief moment, she wondered if he'd just gotten in, but then she realized he was already sound asleep, his deep, even breath brushing against her neck in quiet comfort. She smiled at the thought of him beside her. She was acutely aware of how comfortable she felt. In a foreign country, sleeping in a bed with her boss. These things should put an itch under her skin. They didn't. Closing her eyes, she allowed sleep to find her again. Only this time, Rachel found a dream worth remembering when she woke the next day. The two of them were in his jet. She wore white, and he was in a tux. The taste of champagne sat on her tongue, and warmth filled her heart. She lifted her heavy hand, noticed a shimmer on her left ring finger, and then the jet began to plunge from the sky. Rachel woke with a start, her heart pulsing against her chest. Costa Rica. Jason in bed beside her. Noise from the other side of the bedroom door. Owen's laughter. She closed her eyes and forced her heartbeat to slow. But the memories of her dream lingered long into her day. It took 2 days for Jason and his team to gather the truth behind the events leading up to the crash, and another 2 for the preliminary report from the International Civil Aviation Organization. Rachel stood beside Jason as he spoke to the press. After thanking the media for coming and for displaying patience while they determined the exact reason Fairchild Charter's Flight 262 went down, Jason delivered all the information he could.
First, we want to extend our deepest sympathy to the Lambert family. Wendy and Ron have been close friends for many years, and Wendy will be missed by everyone. Ron has already flown home, and we hope the press will grant him and his children their privacy as they work through the loss of a wife and mother.
Rachel kept her face void of emotion, never letting the media see the thoughts she had inside.
Toxicology reports have removed the chance of any drug or alcohol use as a reason for this unfortunate accident.
Jason lifted his chin slightly.
A combination of pilot error and passenger interference with the flight crew has been recorded as the cause of this accident. Fairchild Charters will increase our training safety procedures upon landing and takeoff as a result of this accident.
3 men holding recording devices started to speak at once, all of them asking about the passenger interference part of Jason's statement. Jason held up a hand.
Every passenger, on every flight, whether it's with a private company or on a jet with 500 other people, has a certain code of propriety that must be maintained for their own safety and the safety of others. What safety procedure did the Lamberts ignore? One overly large and loud reporter asked.
The others reached forward with their recording devices to wait for the answer. Rachel saw Jason struggle with his reply. She knew he wanted to blurt out the facts, but had to hold them in.
It will all be in the written ICAO report.
Is it true that Wendy Lambert stormed the cockpit door?
Jason spoke into the microphone one last time.
Thank you.
Rachel scurried beside Jason as they were escorted away from the media. Another part of Jason's team stepped up to the microphone to answer some, but not all, of the questions the media sought.
Well done.
Glenn patted Jason's back once they were away from the crowd.
I said a whole lot and a bunch of nothing.
Jason rolled his tired eyes.
You told them what they needed to hear. The rest is in the report. Taking the heat off Fairchild Charters and displaying sympathy for the family was all we needed to do,
Glenn said.
I still can't believe Wendy went off the way they said she did. Telling your wife that you're sleeping with a nanny while a plane is taking off wasn't the wisest choice on Ron's part.
Sleeping with the nanny trumps telling the wife,
Rachel said.
Let's hope for all involved that some of the facts never get revealed. Wendy going postal inside the jet is one thing. The co-pilot opening the door to determine what the threat was is on us.
From there, Wendy physically fought the man and then stormed the cockpit. According to the flight attendant, everything happened fast at that point. The plane lost altitude, and because they weren't even at 10,000 feet, they dropped quickly.
Any word on Albin's condition?
No news from the neurosurgeon in Dallas, Rachel told Glenn, and Roger is flying home tomorrow.
Then we're just about done here,
Glenn said.
If you want to go home now, I'll stay and mop up the rest of this.
Jason smiled at her.
I think it would be better if we stayed and cleaned up, and if you went back to the office to determine what we're returning to. I'd like any heat deflected off Rachel before we come back."
Glenn eyed them both.
"You sure you just don't want to soak up the warmth for a couple more days?"
Rachel wanted to deny Glenn's allegation, but Jason beat her to it.
"A couple days of sunshine and rest sounds like a better start to the new year than we've had."
Glenn patted Jason on the back.
"I have you covered, brother."
He hugged Rachel.
"We'll see you back in New York."
"Fly safe," she told him. Jason watched his brother leave before turning her way.
"I hope you don't mind me kidnapping you for a few more days."
"As long as we can sleep in tomorrow, I won't complain."
They'd been running since the moment they arrived in San Jose, while Nathan tutored Owen on the finer points of picking up women.
"No more room service, no more hospitals."
She put her arm through his as they walked out the door.
"Do you think Ron is going to be okay?"
"I don't know. He's going to have to live with Wendy's death, knowing it was him who put her over the edge."
"How old is the nanny?" Rachel asked as they got into the rental car.
"Not old enough," Jason moaned. "Legal, but no."
"She's out of a job now."
Rachel realized for the first time that the nanny was sleeping with her boss, and look how that worked out.
"Stop that,"
Jason said from the driver's seat.
"Stop what?"
"Where your mind went just now. I don't care if you sleep with the nanny. You'll never be without a job."
Rachel couldn't help but smirk. "I have no desire to sleep with Nathan."
Jason huffed out a short laugh.
"That's quite an image."
Halfway back to the hotel, she brought up the office.
"You know they're all talking about us."
"I imagine they are."
"It probably isn't good."
He glanced over briefly, then watched the road.
"If I made a habit of sleeping with my secretarial assistants, perhaps you'd have a point. Not only have I never done that, I've never introduced a woman as a girlfriend. I will accept some noise over the situation, but I expect a certain degree of respect. Neither of us deserves any less."
She blinked. "You lost me at girlfriend."
He didn't bother looking her way.
"Well, catch up."
Smiling, she watched the rest of the miles melt away as they turned to the fun part of their working vacation. Jason took them to the coast. He rented a house on the sand that came with a chef and a housekeeper. Before they arrived, he'd forced Rachel to pick out a few things to wear on the beach, telling her he owed her a dress after the splattered paint incident. Now they were even. For the next 3 days, he laughed, ate, soaked up the sunshine he knew would be absent when they returned to New York, and he fell even harder. It wasn't going to be easy letting her return to her own bed now that he'd had her in his. Returning to work was going to prove difficult, which was a big reason as to why he opted to stay in Costa Rica a little longer. Glenn had sent him a message letting him know the office gossip was running wild and that it probably wouldn't die until they returned to squelch it.
"Someone looks comfortable,"
he heard Rachel's voice above him. He opened his eyes in the hammock he'd managed to get into without dumping his butt on the ground.
"I need to get one of these."
"The hammock or the house in Central America?"
she teased.
"Both."
Her smile dropped. He winked.
"I never know when to take you seriously about those things."
"Gotta keep it a little mysterious, or you'll start sleeping with the nanny."
"Nah, the accent does nothing for me."
"The accent does something for everyone in a skirt,"
he told her. She looked down at her bikini.
"I'm not wearing one."
His eyes traveled down her frame as he remembered the tiny mole she had on her left hip, which was barely covered by the material she wore.
"I see that."
"If I didn't know better, I'd say you just undressed me in your mind."
His eyes stopped at a particularly warm spot between her thighs.
"Guilty."
She shuffled from one foot to the other. Jason patted his side.
"Come here,
In the hammock?
Yeah.
He scooted over a tiny bit. You're nuts. We'll both dump on the sand.
I have great balance.
Rachel approached gently and set her butt on the net.
Now just lie back.
The second she leaned back, the net twisted. Jason tried to right them, but ended up on the ground, on his back, with Rachel on top of him.
You okay?
She asked, laughing.
It hurts.
He scowled.
Aw, poor baby.
He grabbed her butt with both hands and squeezed. She laughed before leaning over to kiss his lips. He was hard instantly, the pain in his back from the stick that he landed on forgotten. Rachel wedged her knee between his thighs and took full advantage of her position. Jason liked her like this, raw and real. The care of work and responsibility had left them the moment they'd left the city of San Jose, and the woman on top of him had turned into a playful minx he wanted to enjoy all day and night. Sand stuck to their bodies as their kiss turned more heated and determined.
"Where is Owen?"
he asked, having zero desire to have the kid walk up on them. "Back at the house." She moved her lips to his ear, bit the lobe. "Nathan said they were having a poker tournament."
"Sounds like it will take a while,"
he said against her ear as his hand slid to the knot tying her swimsuit. Her hand slid into his shorts, the sand she brought with her grating against the soft skin of his cock. He imagined she would be just as raw if they finished this where they were.
"Sand."
She shifted her hips.
"I don't like it either."
He looked at the turquoise water and private beach.
"I have a better idea."
Lifting her off him, he stood to his feet and swept her off hers. The water was bathtub warm, the gentle waves nothing more than a lap pool without a current. He waited until he was waist high before letting her stand. Salt water replaced sand, but felt much better against his skin when she touched him.
"Is this gonna work?"
she asked, hopping up and wrapping her legs around his waist. His cock pushed against their clothing.
"We won't know until we try."
And boy did he want to try. Their weightlessness in the water made it easier for him to reach between them and pet the folds of her sex. She whimpered and kissed him, riding his hand until he couldn't take it anymore. With her hands wrapped around his neck, he adjusted their clothing while she kissed him. He teased her with his cock and then pushed deep inside her with a gasp. Or was that her? Rachel dropped her forehead onto his shoulder.
"I like this."
So did he. She used her hips, and he guided her with the palms of his hands. And they made out like teenage kids on summer break. Their bodies became one in the water, the feeling prolonged by the unique and unfamiliar position. But as they always did, they found a rhythm that worked for both of them. Rachel clawed at his back as she found her release, and he buried his head in her chest when he found his.
"You're habit-forming," she told him.
"Like chocolate?"
he laughed.
"Without the calories."
She looked at him, her eyes warm and sated. When he slipped out of her, she pouted.
"We aren't leaving until the morning."
She grinned again. "And we can sleep on the plane." The look in her eyes told him they wouldn't be sleeping that night.
"I don't want to leave at all," she said. "I could homeschool Owen."
"You're proficient in chemistry?"
She dropped her head onto his shoulder again.
"That won't work."
"We'll come back,"
he promised. Rachel kissed him again, and Jason wondered if the owners of the house would be interested in selling. A weekend a month on this beach would be worth whatever price they wanted. Chapter 19. Returning to the cold was like a slap in the face. To make it harder, there were 3 inches of snow on the ground.
"You sure I can't stay the night?"
Jason asked one last time as he said goodbye at her door.
We agreed to weekends, she told him again.
You suggested weekends. I said every day that ends in Y.
I will see you every day that ends in Y and sleep over on the weekends. It was a compromise Rachel knew he didn't want, but agreed to anyway. Besides, what he was suggesting sounded a whole lot like moving in together. And that was moving at warp speed, and not something she'd ever done in her life. There was Owen to consider first, and the two of them hadn't had a private conversation since before the new year.
Am I picking you up in the morning? He asked.
Are you taking the train?
I think I'll fly in.
She shook her head. I'll take the train.
Why? Everyone knows you and I were together in Central America.
Fine, but I'm not ready to rub it in. He narrowed his eyes.
Are you always going to be this stubborn?
Probably. He turned to leave.
I've been warned.
Hey.
Yeah?
No kiss goodbye? He hooked an arm around her waist, pulled her in.
Stubborn and demanding.
Get used to it. He kissed her, hard, and then slapped her butt with his free hand.
See you tomorrow.
When he walked out the door, she leaned against it and wrapped her arms around her waist with a grin. She glanced at the pile of mail that could wait until morning and walked upstairs to chat with Owen. Rachel felt a kinship to Moses as she walked into work the next morning. The sea of colleagues parted as she walked by. Some ducked their heads and spoke to each other. Some shifted their eyes away. When she made it to her desk, she'd felt the daggers from every angle of the building.
Nice tan!
Julie hovered over her, extending a hand holding a cup of coffee.
Thank God for coffee.
Julie sat, wheeled her chair close.
You know everyone is talking.
They weren't within earshot of anyone, but they still kept their voices low. It isn't what everyone is thinking.
Oh?
It's different, Julie. Julie looked unconvinced.
Uh-huh.
It is. Julie slid her sleek black hair behind an ear.
We're friends, right?
I like to think so. She glanced up, determined she could say more, and did.
What would you say to me if I told you I was sleeping with Gerald?
I'd remind you he's married.
And if he wasn't?
That he's too old for you.
Julie swatted her arm.
And if he wasn't?
Rachel didn't like the advice swimming in her head.
You'd remind me he was my boss,
came Julie's hoarse whisper.
I know. But it isn't like that, I assure you.
Julie shook her head.
What is the company name on your check?
I know. And she did.
You might know, but you've forgotten.
Be careful, Rachel. And Julie swiveled back to her cube and clicked away on her computer. Then her voice interrupted Rachel's self-argument.
So how was Costa Rica?
Spectacular, once the investigation was over. Julie moaned.
I hate you a little right now.
Rachel smiled, knowing they'd be just fine. She attempted to stay at her desk most of the morning, but nature called, and she needed to stretch her legs. Silence followed her everywhere, and after 10 minutes, she walked back to her desk. Beside it, Gerald stood with two of New York's finest and a woman she'd never seen before.
Here she is now.
Everyone turned to stare in Rachel's direction. What's going on?
This is Ms. Brenner from the Department of Children and Families.
Rachel's heart plunged.
Is Owen okay?
She searched the faces of the police officers and didn't see pity.
Owen is fine,
Ms. Brenner told her. As soon as the feeling of dread left, one of anxiety took over.
So what's this about?
Ms. Brenner wasn't a lot older than Rachel, much shorter and wider, without a bit of kindness in her face. She stepped back, and the officers stepped forward.
We'd like to have a talk with you, Ms. Price,
Rachel stepped back. About what?
You took Owen Moreau out of the country, is that right?
Ms. Brenner asked.
Yes, we just returned last night.
Why?
You've been specifically ordered not to take Owen out of the country or the immediate area of your residence and employment. Violation of that order could result in kidnapping charges, fines, and possible imprisonment, Ms. Brenner said.
Air left her lungs. What are you talking about? What order?
Do you really want to do this here, Miss Price?
Rachel followed the gaze of Ms. Brenner to find a dozen co-workers watching. She swiveled back to her accuser.
I have legal guardianship over Owen.
The taller of the two police officers stepped forward.
Why don't we talk about this at the station?
Rachel was seeing stars.
Am I being arrested?
Kidnapping is a felony,
Ms. Brenner announced, louder than she needed to.
I didn't kidnap Owen.
Let's talk at the station.
Rachel stepped back again.
And if I refuse?
The officer placed a hand on her shoulder. She glanced at his badge. Officer Peyton.
We're not asking, Ms. Price.
This isn't happening. He turned her around, the other officer flanked her other side, and they started down the corridor that had parted a path for her only a few hours before. Before they reached the elevator, Jason and Glenn ran toward them, putting the police officers on guard.
What the hell is going on here?
Rachel wanted to run to him. Let him make all this go away.
They're saying I kidnapped Owen.
What the fu- Sir, you're going to have to stand back.
Rachel didn't kidnap her own kid.
Owen is not Miss Price's biological child.
Jason turned his glare on Ms. Brenner.
Who are you?
The officers nudged Rachel into the elevator when it opened. Jason started toward her again. Glenn held him back.
I'll be there with an attorney,
he told her as her eyes swelled with unshed tears.
Don't say a thing.
Once they were alone in the elevator, Officer Peyton read her her rights. Rachel sat in a room she'd only seen in the movies. A large dark window screamed a single view from the opposite side, cameras pointed at her, and a heavy door kept her inside. The only saving grace was that she had yet to be fingerprinted or placed in handcuffs. The police officers informed her that they would be forced to restrain her if she didn't cooperate. So many raw emotions coursed through her, minute by minute. Disbelief came first, then crashing concern for Owen. Where was he? Was he okay? This had the Colemans written all over it. She wasn't even given the chance to retrieve her purse and cell phone before they pulled her out of the office. Calling home to see if Owen was there wasn't possible. Taking Jason's advice, she waited in the interrogation room while the social worker questioned her repeatedly. The only thing Rachel offered was the honest truth. I have not seen any paperwork from the court, any court, telling me I have restrictions on where I can take Owen. This is all a misunderstanding.
The Colemans believe you're a flight risk, which mandates the court stop you from traveling more than 100 miles until the matter can be solved.
Rachel glared at the social worker while talking with the investigating officer. His name she'd already forgotten.
Which I would have followed had I been told.
You were informed, Ms. Brenner said from the corner of the room.
Where is Owen?
Rachel asked.
He's safe.
Rachel clutched her hands into tiny fists and kept them hidden in her lap.
Why did you take Owen to Costa Rica?
They were trying to catch her on something they could use against her. That was the point behind being told her Miranda rights. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law.
I'd like to speak to a lawyer.
The investigator sucked in a deep breath.
It's a simple question, Miss Price, Ms. Brenner said.
I have the right to an attorney, Ms. Brenner.
Being bullied by a social worker was not something Rachel was going to stand for.
You took Owen out of the country to hide him from his father, knowing he will gain custody.
Rachel's jaw dropped. I thought social workers were neutral parties that didn't take sides.
Owen is my priority.
Rachel lifted from her seat.
No, Owen is my priority.
The officer stood, placed a hand in the air.
Ladies!
He turned to the social worker.
Miss Price has requested a lawyer. We will continue this when she's obtained one.
Once Ms. Brenner left the room, Rachel lowered her head to the table. Alone in the room, adrenaline oozed from her system and left her in tears. When the door opened again, the investigator entered, this time with a woman in uniform.
We're moving you to holding.
Am I being charged? Rachel asked.
Not yet, the woman told her.
Rachel knew enough to understand that was a good thing. She was led to a phone where she made her call. Unfortunately, she hadn't memorized Jason's number, and she'd been told not to contact Owen. That left her with work. The direct line to Gerald's office went unanswered, so she tried Julie.
Julie!
Holy shit, what is going on?
I don't know.
Are you in jail?
I have one call, Julie. I don't have Jason's cell memorized. Can you get a hold of him?
Everyone left here the second they took you away.
Talk to his secretary. I need a lawyer.
I think that's what he was screaming about.
The legal team here is scrambling. I can't believe this is happening.
Rachel voiced her thoughts, looked around.
I've been told not to get a hold of Owen. I need to know he's okay.
What's his number?
Rachel gave it to her, and then questioned if that was the right thing to do.
He needs to know I'm okay.
Are you?
No. I'm fine.
You don't sound fine.
Tell him I'm fine. This is all a huge misunderstanding that we will get worked out soon.
I will. Be careful in there.
Like I have a choice.
A holding cell in the heart of New York was not where Rachel thought she'd be when she woke up that morning. For a Tuesday, the place was surprisingly packed. It wasn't like it was the middle of the night or a weekend. The small cell closed behind her with a resounding click. Two bone-thin women at the opposite end of the cell both eyed her up and down. Neither of them looked older than 30, but both wore clothes much too skimpy for winter, with worn-out high-heel shoes.
Miss Fancy Pants,
someone cackled.
I bet you ain't never been in here before.
The woman who spoke looked homeless. Rachel looked around for a place to sit and decided standing was a better idea.
What's the matter, honey? Ain't got nothing to say?
Talk about being tossed into a den of snakes. I'm having a shit day, Rachel said to anyone listening. Several women burst out laughing.
Ain't we all, honey? Ain't we all?
Let me guess, one of the skinny, worn women in the back said. It's all a misunderstanding, and you ain't guilty.
That brought laughter a second time. Telling this crowd she was guilty of taking Owen to Costa Rica for a week probably wouldn't earn her any respect. Instead of saying anything back, Rachel leaned against the bars of the holding cell and prayed Jason would arrive soon. Chapter 20.
This was a first.
Jason's experience with the legal system was only on the level of corporate paper pushing and covering one's ass. As his attorneys quickly informed him, they weren't proficient at criminal representation, but had a handful of high-profile attorneys who would jump. Clive Redshaw walked alongside Jason's attorney up the steps of the police station. After introductions were out of the way, Clive jumped right into his questions.
I have no idea what they could possibly be holding her on. We went to Costa Rica following the downing of one of my planes. She took Owen since I needed her with me.
Owen is the child she has legal guardianship over?
He is 15, but yes.
That's all you know.
Jason hesitated.
I know Owen's grandparents have been rattling on about Owen staying with them.
Where are the parents?
Mom is dead. Dad hasn't been in the picture.
Clive looked him straight in the eye.
Anything else?
I have nothing.
All right, then. I need to talk with the investigating officer, and then Rachel.
Can I see her?
Not yet. Hold on.
Clive smiled and walked away. Jason's phone rang, and Owen's face lit up his screen. He tried his calm voice when he answered.
Hey, buddy.
What the fuck is going on?
Owen's shaky voice brought all of Jason's nerves on edge.
Are you okay?
No, I'm not okay. I was home, sleeping, when the police pounded on the door.
Take a deep breath.
Rachel isn't answering my calls or my texts.
Jason looked up at the facade of the police station and then to his lawyer, who was watching him.
She can't talk to you right now.
They told me I have to go to my grandparents' house. I'm not going. I need to talk to Rachel.
Owen, calm down.
I'm not going to the hag's house, he yelled.
Is there someone there now?
Some social worker and a cop.
Let me talk to them.
He heard a few more colorful expletives from Owen's lips before an unfamiliar voice got on the phone.
Mr. Fairchild?
That's right. Who is this?
My name is Benjamin White. I'm with Child Services. I've been called in to relocate Owen to his grandparents' home until this matter is resolved.
Jason's back teeth hurt with the pressure he was placing on them.
And how is that working for you, Mr. White?
Seems Owen is refusing.
You would too, if you didn't trust your grandparents.
Well, we can't leave him here unattended. He is a minor.
He's 15. That's hardly a child.
Regardless, we need to place him in the care of a home until we can determine custody.
A home? I have a home. He can stay with me.
I doubt that is an option in this situation, Mr. Fairchild. Our understanding is that you've been named as a possible accomplice in taking Owen out of the country after an order was given to keep him here.
The desire to reach through the phone and grab a neck gripped him hard.
Then what are our options, Mr. White?
We will need to take Owen to a temporary foster care home until a more permanent solution can be found.
Something told Jason that wouldn't fly for long either.
Fine. Let me talk to him.
Owen exploded the minute he was back on the phone.
Fuck foster care!
Whoa. Calm down.
Jason!
Close your mouth and listen to me, okay?
A long, drawn-out breath pulled Jason into the phone.
Rachel and I need you to stay calm.
Where is she?
Owen already knew the answer. Jason could hear it in his voice.
The authorities are questioning her.
Owen hissed.
In jail?
Questioning her, Owen. Nothing I can't handle. Do you trust me?
Yes.
Then stay calm. I have my phone on me. You have Nathan's number if I don't answer. Let them take you to the foster care house.
Jason!
It's temporary, Owen. I promise you.
Why can't I just stay here?
Owen's voice started to break. Having the kid cussing mad was a hell of a lot easier than hearing him cry.
We will figure this out.
I hate them!
Who them was didn't need to be explained. Clive Redshaw was in his late 40s. His suit mirrored the type Jason wore. There wasn't a hair out of place on his head, and his smile looked fake.
Attorney-client privilege plainly means that you can tell me anything, and I cannot reveal this conversation to a judge, or the police, anyone.
Is that your way of asking if I kidnapped Owen? He looked her straight in the eye.
Did you?
No!
Great. Now that we have that out of the way, let's get started.
He removed a large legal pad from his briefcase and looked through his notes.
The charges they are racking up right now have little legal footing until they can determine if you were given proper notice of the Colemans' intent to obtain custody of Owen. Did you receive a certified letter from the child custody courts?
No, not since Emily died and California granted me guardianship over Owen.
Nothing in New York or Connecticut?
Nothing. Certified means I would have had to sign for it, right?
Exactly.
I would have remembered signing for a court hearing. Do they know when they sent it?
She asked. I was told after Christmas. It's recorded as received, which is why you're here. I'm waiting on a clerk at the county office to pull the tracking and see the signature.
How long is that going to take?
He didn't look hopeful.
It's the county. They don't move fast.
They can't prove I received something I didn't. So once that is determined, this all goes away, right?
Maybe.
Rachel glared.
You took Owen out of the country.
I have legal guardianship.
You have the means to take him out again.
It's not my plane, she argued.
It's your boyfriend's, so the answer is yes. The court will look at you and Owen as a flight risk and ground you until custody is determined. And they won't likely allow you guardianship until that is figured out.
I thought I had to be deemed unfit and that Owen's life and well-being are in danger in order for anyone to take Owen away. Clive thumbed through a few papers, pulled one out, and started to read from it.
It says here that you have exposed Owen to harsh chemicals, resulting in illness.
Rachel's jaw was going to have to be surgically removed from her chest at this rate. What?
You've been remodeling an old house with lead paint, containing possible asbestos, and not taking the necessary safety precautions.
What a crock of garbage that is! Owen has had a few colds, most likely due to the change in weather neither of us are used to.
Does your house have lead paint?
I don't know. It's an old house.
Asbestos?
I would think the home inspector would have said something if there was. Clive folded his hands on his notepad.
All of this will have to be determined.
So let me get this straight. The Colemans are claiming I'm a danger to Owen, unfit as his guardian, and the court is willing to take him away based on an unsubstantiated claim?
The court has taken him away. The emergency injunction was filed 2 days ago because it was discovered that Owen was out of the country.
So what were they doing? Watching the airport for our return?
I doubt they had to do that. Does Owen have an Instagram account?
He's 15. He has all that stuff.
Then chances are he posted when he came home, which is why you're here today.
So where is Owen now?
I don't have that answer. Right now, I'm working on getting you out of here.
She sat taller in her seat. Once she was out of there, she'd find Owen herself. I didn't kidnap Owen. If I did, then I'm the most unintelligent criminal on the planet since I returned home with him. And if the court has taken him away, I can't possibly leave with him again, now can I?
All sound arguments I will use.
Then use them, please. The thought of sleeping here makes me ill. Clive looked around the small room.
I believe that is the point, Miss Price.
He stood to leave.
I have to caution you.
I'm listening.
When I do get you out of here, don't contact Owen. Let others talk for you. Don't meet him without a social worker present and with permission.
I've already asked a friend to check on him.
Which shows concern. But from this moment on, do not speak to the boy alone.
She wanted to cry. He's going to be scared.
He will be cared for.
She shook her head. No one cares more for that child than I do. This time, when they led her back to the holding cell, Rachel didn't care that she sat on a sticky bench that could result in an unnamed disease. She leaned her head back against the cold stone wall and closed her eyes until her name was called again. She'd aged 5 years and 6 hours. Jason pulled his jacket from his shoulders and folded her into it as he shuffled her out of the station.
How is he?
she asked before they made it to the waiting car.
Angry.
Please tell me he isn't at the Colemans. He'll run away the first chance he gets.
They placed him in foster care.
He shuffled her into the back of the waiting car, and the driver pulled away from the curb.
Strangers.
He has my number and is texting constantly.
Rachel blinked several times.
The lawyer told me not to contact him.
His lawyer had told him the same thing, not that Jason was listening.
I told him not to tell me where he is unless he feels threatened. That way no one can accuse us of plotting to take him away.
She made a grabby motion with her hands.
Tell him I'm out, and that I love him.
Jason's heart bucked a little with the conviction of her words. He removed his phone and typed in her request, word for word. Within seconds, his phone rang.
We can't answer it. The police can subpoena the phone records and see we talk to him. We're better off texting.
Can't talk on the phone. This is bullshit.
I told you he's angry.
Our attorney is demanding immediate action on releasing you to Rachel.
Tonight?
Jason glanced at Rachel.
Clive said 36 hours at the earliest.
If you tell him that, he's gonna bolt.
She glanced out the window.
It's cold outside.
He hated skirting around the truth.
Probably tomorrow.
Jason showed Rachel the text before he hit send. With her nod, he did.
School starts tomorrow.
Then go and get your mind off all this. With any luck, you'll be home tomorrow night.
It took Owen a few seconds to reply.
This is screwed up. We came here to the Battle Axe and her wimpy husband to avoid this crap.
He needs to vent, Rachel said. He gets chatty when he's nervous. Talking calms him down.
How about Nathan?
Good idea.
Jason switched contacts and called. After a few seconds, Nathan let him know he was chatting with Owen and letting him bitch. Only once Rachel was convinced that Owen was taken care of did she collapse into Jason's side.
What's going through your mind?
He asked, his arm holding her close as the driver maneuvered the car out of Manhattan and onto the freeway.
I don't think I've skipped one emotion today. Fear, anger, disbelief. Part of me wished we'd stayed in Central America.
He kissed the top of her head.
I thought that more than once today.
She shifted in her seat to look at him. I don't know what I would have done without you.
You would have found a lawyer.
No, not that. I mean, yes, I needed someone like Clive, but I mean talking with Owen. I'm all he has. Knowing you've been talking to him makes it a whole lot easier that I was stuck in that dirty holding cell.
She closed her eyes and shook her head.
I'm sorry I couldn't get you out faster.
I didn't do anything wrong, and yet my freedom was taken away. Owen is spending the night with strangers. I have a burning desire to drive over to the Colemans and scream at them. They're trying to say I'm unfit because of lead paint in the walls of my house. How is any of that possible? How many people live in homes with old paint?
Her shoulders started to shake and her eyes swelled.
Worse? I didn't keep my promise to Emily. I said I'd never let Owen feel alone after she died.
Jason pulled her into his chest.
Come here.
This isn't fair.
I know, hon. We're going to make this right.
She cried in his arms until her tears ran out. They drove directly to his home, and he led her to his room. The bathtub in the master suite hadn't been used in years. He drew her a bath and left her alone.
How is she?
Nathan asked when he found Jason in the kitchen.
A mess. Poor lass.
Is Owen settled for the night?
He is, but I don't think the lad will stay where he is long, Jason. He's strong-willed, that one. He's 15, confused, and angry. I'll keep talking to him. Let him know to call me before doing anything stupid.
Nathan turned to leave the room.
Oh, and Mary stopped by. Left a casserole. Said to call if you needed her.
Glenn's wife had quickly become a rock in the foundation of their family.
Thanks.
Nathan nodded and left out the back door and across the yard to his home on the property. After following Mary's instructions and heating up dinner, Jason brought a large plate and two forks up to his bedroom. Two steps into the room, and he found Rachel in his bed, curled up into a ball, and sound asleep. As much as he wanted to marvel at the image of her in his space, he couldn't help but mourn the reason why she was there. He set the plate of food down, took a bite, and walked into his closet to shed his clothes. After a quick shower, he dimmed the lights of the room and crawled into bed beside Rachel. Chapter 21. Owen wasn't in a shelter, but the accommodations were uncomfortably close. The room he was given had four beds, two of which were taken outside of his, and that was for the boys. Another room housed three beds, with one girl curled up and talking to herself.
"Dude, you gonna eat that?"
The kid asking was named Chris. The 16-year-old had made it clear he was in charge the second Owen was shown his bed. Owen glanced at the cold burrito and decided it wasn't worth fighting for, even if he thought he'd probably eat it later. The family he'd been placed with ate at 5:30, whether you were hungry or not. The woman, Mrs. Sims, hadn't missed a meal since birth. Her husband was the polar opposite. They both smiled at him when the social worker dropped Owen off. While they didn't completely drop the act when the door shut, it was apparent the couple who took in temporary foster children didn't do it for the love of kids.
"Have it."
Owen pushed his plate Chris's way. The older kid didn't have to be told twice.
"Why are you here?"
he asked, with a mouthful of food. Owen wasn't even sure how to answer that.
"Why are you here?"
he asked instead.
"My dad got tossed back in, beat up some chick stealing from him."
"Oh, man, I'm sorry." Chris shrugged, took another bite.
"Whatever, better her than me."
Owen swallowed.
"What about your mom?" "No clue, but if I ever find her, I'll beat her myself. Fucking leave me with that asshole."
Owen looked around the barren walls.
"Have you been here long?" "They don't keep you here more than a few days. Gotta find you a couple willing to put up with your drama."
"Sounds like you've done this a lot." Chris dropped half the burrito on the plate and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
"Not much longer. I've got some friends hooking me up with a job."
Owen glanced at Chris's drawn eyes and pale skin, and couldn't help but wonder what kind of job he thought he'd actually be able to get.
"Yep, get a job, make some serious money, and get the hell out of dives like this."
"It's not that bad."
They both turned to Alex, the other kid in the room. He couldn't have been older than 11.
"What do you know?"
Chris demanded, his shoulders tensed.
"Better than the streets."
Owen's jaw dropped.
"You were on the street?
Last summer."
"How old are you?"
12.
He didn't look 12. "So what's your story?"
Owen's fascination with these kids' lives started to take away some of his own anxiety about the situation.
"My mom is sick."
"Your mom's crazy."
"Shut up! She's sick!"
For a 12-year-old, Alex had some bite in him. Chris decided he was the authority on Alex's life.
"I heard old man Sims talking, and your mom is bouncing around a rubber room with white coats keeping her from jumping off a bridge."
Alex was on his feet and across the room in a heartbeat. Owen stood up and found himself between the two boys.
"Knock it off!" he yelled at Chris.
Chris looked around Owen and poked his words even deeper.
"Crazy and rocking in a corner, talking to herself."
Alex pulled back his small fist and lunged. Unfortunately, Owen didn't move fast enough and caught the misguided punch with his lip.
Chris doubled over, laughing, which just made Alex try harder. Alex pushed past Owen and tried to tackle Chris. He wasn't a match. Chris outweighed Alex by a good 50 pounds and 2 feet.
You want a piece of me, little sh-?